Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The images are seared in the mind of the world from the earliest days of the War on Terror. Hooded prisoners, black goggles, orange jumpsuits, in chains, in chain link cages at Guantanamo. The White House called them the worst of the worst, and some were, but most apparently were not. Hundreds have been released. Human rights and torture accusations swirled, and today the order coming out of Barack Obama's White House, we're told Guantanamo's detention camp will close. This hour on Point, shutting down Gitmo. You can join the conversation. Is this a weight off your shoulders? A step toward getting right with the world, with the law? Is it a danger, a worry? We expect to be going to Guantanamo Bay itself this hour for reaction at the U.S. Navy base there. But first, for the latest and what's planned, we're joined from Charlottesville, Virginia, by Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor and legal analyst at Slate. Dahlia, thank you very much for being here.
Hi there, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So this draft order is all over the place today out of the White House, even though at this minute that we speak, not yet signed by Barack Obama. What does it say, Dahlia?
Well, there's three different draft order. There's one that we've clapped eyes on, and the one that we've clapped eyes on is exactly what you just said. It's an order that essentially shutters Guantanamo. The order says that's to happen as soon as possible, but certainly within 1 year.
Within 1 year, and that's not all. This is sort of at the center of a very big network of prisons, CIA secret prisons beyond Guantanamo, and then there's the, and then there's how to handle the detainees. What else is going to be signed?
There's a second order that will shutter the so-called CIA black sites. So these are the secret prisons. I think the number is 8, although it's never been confirmed, that are all over the world, these secret prisons that in which other detainees have been held. And that same executive order allegedly is going to also say that the CIA must from now on conform its interrogation methods to the rules as stated in the U.S. Army Field Manual. So they cannot go beyond those constraints, and that is a dramatic change. And then there's a third order, again, one that we haven't yet seen, that's going to just order a general review of all U.S. detention policies. So the one that we've seen with these very, very specific rules for shutting Guantanamo relates only to Gitmo. I think the others we're going to see very shortly.
Barack Obama was clear on the campaign trail that he would close Guantanamo. He's also been clear, as have the people around him, that this won't be easy. Dahlia, listen with us for a second to Eric Holder on his way in as Attorney General, talking to the Senate Judiciary Committee earlier this month, talking about closing Guantanamo and saying it won't be easy.
Guantanamo will be closed. The president-elect during the campaign made that promise. Steps are being taken as we speak to look at the manner in which that can occur. I will tell you this will not be an easy task.
Dahlia, describe to us some of the difficulties involved here.
Well, one of the things that's very interesting, Tom, is that while this executive order shuttering Guantanamo does a lot, it leaves many other questions open. And I think that's what Holder was flicking at last week in his hearing, that the executive branch is not quite prepared to tell us yet the nuts and bolts of, for instance, how we might prosecute people that we determine that we're going to prosecute. So what the order does is it makes very clear that the first thing out the gate, we're going to have an immediate, within 30 days, we're going to have a review of the standards of confinement at Gitmo. So that means, are the standards under which people being held in compliance with the Geneva Conventions? That happens instantly. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happens immediately is the Attorney General and several others are going to review every single case. They're going to review what are the facts and allegations in every single case of the approximately 245 prisoners still there. And then there's going to be this system of, quote, rolling transfers. So as your case is reviewed, the AG is going to determine, do we have a basis to hold you? If we're just holding you because we don't know where to send you, we need to start reigniting diplomatic efforts to get people placed. As you know, Tom, one of the things that's been a real problem, particularly with these 17 Chinese Uyghurs at Gitmo, is that they've been
from Western China.
From China, exactly. They've been cleared. They're not enemy combatants. They've been cleared for release for a long time. Nobody wants them, and the United States doesn't want to send them back to China because there's a legitimate fear they'll be tortured. So in addition to the 80 or so who face military commissions there, there's an awful lot of folks there who just, we have no place to send them. That's a diplomatic political problem, not a legal problem. So we've had Portugal come forward and say, you know, we might take some. Apparently Germany is making noises about taking some. One of the things the Obama administration is rededicating itself to is really redoubling efforts to get folks placed if they're not dangerous. But then, as I said, there is this open question about what are we going to do with the people against whom there are legitimate charges, who we really do need to prosecute. One of the things that Obama immediately ordered was a 120-day halt to the military commissions there. So presumably they're not going to face military commissions, but that means they still need to face some kind of due process.
And where will they be while they wait for that? Fort Leavenworth in Kansas has been mentioned, Camp Pendleton in California. Dolly, if you'd be good enough to stand by for just a moment. We've just got a line through to Guantanamo Bay there at the end of Cuba, and Carol Rosenberg, reporter for the Miami Herald, who's been covering Guantanamo and the earlier Camp X-Ray on the site there since 2002. She joins us now from Guantanamo Bay. Carol, thank you very much for being there.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So how is this news, how has it begun to be received? What reaction are you seeing, Carol?
Well, the first thing they've done, as Dahlia mentioned, is they've shut down the war court. There'll be no more prosecutions, at least until, I guess, May. So today, all the reporters, all the defense lawyers, all the observers, we're all being put on an airplane and taken out of here. They've shut down the prosecutions, they've shut down the trials, and one phase of, I would say, Bush detainee doctrine is emphatically on hold. No more trials.
And what about the prisoners themselves? 800 brought to Guantanamo over these 7 years, 550 or so released, 245 or so still there. What are you hearing about their immediate fate, Carol?
Well, I mean, the word gets out in the camp really quickly. We know that on the night of the election, they were chanting Obama, Obama, Obama down at the prison camp.
Wow.
And we know that by the night that the order of the court being stopped, some of the people being charged with the crimes knew that their trials were on hold. But we don't know any more than they know when they'll be going, where they'll be going. And, you know, that level of uncertainty is what the prison guards and commanders say has always been a big problem down here. If you don't know where you're going to be this time next year, you don't know, what you're doing, there's a certain level of just anxiety among the prisoners. And I would say, you know, the guards also don't know when their job is going to end down here.
Carol, 800 have been there, far fewer there today. Take us back to the rough spots. I mean, it's been rough all the way, and the whole world has seen it, the images. But you've had suicides, you've had sort of starvation campaigns there, and you have had the allegation, even from the head judge down there, of torture.
Absolutely, absolutely. The woman who runs the court process, who's up in D.C., who's a Bush administration appointee, Susan Crawford, told Bob Woodward in the Washington Post that they would not be prosecuting one of the people down here who they believe would have been a plotter on September 11th had he had the opportunity, because she said, we tortured him. So there have been allegations of abuse all along. There have been allegations of prisoner misbehavior all along. There's been hunger strikes, as you said. We had four of these detainees throughout the years hang themselves. The position of the Pentagon was that this was war, and they were, you know, fighting war with their suicides. And the position of their lawyers is this was despair and uncertainty. Another elderly Afghan man died of colorectal cancer, and we've had about, like you said, 550 go home. Some have gone home to detention and trials and further imprisonment in their homelands, and some have gone back to their lives. I mean, we hear stories of Salim Hamdan, the driver for Osama bin Laden, finished his sentence, and his lawyer told me last night he's back home with his family, including a child he never saw because the daughter was born after Americans captured him back in November 01 in Afghanistan. So it's a mixed bag. You know, for sure, they've also said that one of the people who was released here became a suicide bomber in Iraq. Someday, maybe under the Obama administration, we'll get a little bit more look inside the files, and we'll know what kind of people they had here. But a real mixed bag, for sure.
That's why
they've let 500 people go.
Dahlia, we've just got you for another minute here. How would you describe, in a nutshell, Dahlia, the price to American standing, law, human rights, of these 7 years of Guantanamo detention?
Oh, I think it's been inestimable, Tom. The damage has been horrifying. You know, we've heard almost to the point that it's a cliche that Guantanamo has become the single best recruiting tool for Al-Qaeda, that these images that you described at the beginning of hooded prisoners, prisoners in solitary confinement, prisoners who are very, very young, several of them when they committed their alleged crimes, who've just not seen the light of day for 6.5, 7 years. Everything Carol describes is absolutely accurate. And I think it's been just a horrific black eye on the United States' part. It seems to me that the fact that Obama felt such urgency to simply shutter the camp and move on, and work out the details later of the prosecutions, but to just end this, really, I think, is emblematic of how much damage this has done to the United States standing in the world.
Carol Rosenberg, you're on your way out. Maybe for the last time, you've covered it for a long time. Your parting thoughts. I've just got you for 20 seconds more here, Carol, as you leave Guantanamo.
Yeah, we'll be back covering it as long as the prison camps are containing detainees.
Good.
The court may be over, but we're going to keep covering it, Tom.
Good. So you'll be there and have been there for many years, 7 years of detention there. Soon, we're told, to end. Carol Rosenberg with the Miami Herald in Guantanamo Bay. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Dahlia Lithwick at Slate. Dahlia, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about shutting down Guantanamo. Barack Obama and the promise to end imprisonment of terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. We just heard from Guantanamo, but let's hear a little tape from one of the prisoners themselves. Omar Khadr, a Canadian citizen, was captured in Afghanistan at the age of 15. A year or so later, he's 16, being interrogated in Guantanamo prison. In this tape, you can hear him sobbing and asking for medical help, saying he's losing the use of his eyes and legs. This is an excerpt of a video released by his lawyers.
He said himself, I can't move my arms. I requested medical for a long time. He doesn't know anything about it.
Well, I mean, they look like they're healing well to me. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I think you're getting good medical care.
No, I'm not. You're not here. I lost my eyes. I lost my feet, everything.
No, you still have your eyes. And your feet are still at the end of your legs.
16-year-old Canadian Omar Khadr talking there, crying there, with an interrogator at Guantanamo. Barack Obama will, we are told, today sign the order saying this will close. At this minute, that signature not on the paper yet, but we're looking at the issues. Earlier this month, talking to George Stephanopoulos of ABC, Stephanopoulos asked the president whether he was getting shaky about his promise to close down the detention center. Obama said no, no fudging. He would shut down Guantanamo.
It's going to take some time, and you know, our legal teams are working in consultation with our national security apparatus as we speak to help design exactly what we need to do. But I don't want to be ambiguous about this. We are going to close Guantanamo, and we are going to make sure that the procedures we set up are ones that abide by our Constitution. That is not only the right thing to do, but it actually has to be part of our broader national security strategy, because we will send a message to the world that we are serious about our values.
But president-elect then, president now, said it will not be easy.
It is more difficult than I think a lot of people realize. And we are going to get it done. But part of the challenge that you have is that you've got a bunch of folks who've been detained, many of whom may be very dangerous, who have not been put on trial or have not gone through some adjudication. And some of the evidence against them may be tainted, even though it's true.
Joining us now to look at the closing of Guantanamo and what's involved in that and what it's meant to have it open these 7 years. First, from Washington, Major David Fracht is with us, judge advocate in the Air Force Reserves. He's defense counsel in Pentagon's Office of Military Commissions, represents two Guantanamo detainees, Mohammed Jawad and Ali Al-Balul. He's director of the Criminal Law Practice Center and professor of law at Western State University. Major David Fracht, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
And with us from New York, Matthew Waxman, professor of law at Columbia Law School. He served several positions in the Bush administration and as law clerk to Supreme Court Justice David Souter. Professor Waxman, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Major Fracht, first to you, your assessment of what's gone on at Guantanamo and what it's meant for this country.
Well, it's been an unmitigated disaster. There's no question about that. The abandonment of the rule of law, that's basically what Guantanamo stands for, decision not to treat people who should have been treated as prisoners of war as prisoners of war, the decision not to apply the Geneva Conventions. I mean, Guantanamo was actually selected very specifically because it was deemed to be beyond the reach of any American court of law or indeed any court in the world. And, you know, that decision to basically abandon the rule of law and create a legal black hole was emblematic of the war on terror, and really, you know, did become a rallying cry, of course, in the Islamic world, a recruiting tool, but not only diminished our status in the Muslim world, but among our allies in the Western world, who just simply couldn't fathom how the United States had gone from the leader in the area of human rights and democracy and the rule of law to you know, a total abandonment. So it's really heartening to see that we're reversing course there at this time.
Matthew Waxman, I want to ask you about some of the difficulties that may be involved in that, but let me get at least one call here first from Boston. Catherine is on the line. Hi, Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. As I told your screener, I'm a 9/11 family member, and this is a wonderful day closing Guantanamo. I applaud President Obama. I really have felt that Bin Laden saw that it was pleased by this, by our subverting our Constitution. I feel that we sunk to their level, and I almost feel that this somehow cheapened or dishonored the losses we suffered on 9/11.
Catherine, what was your loss on that day?
My brother was in worked at Cantor Fitzgerald in the North Tower.
He was on what floor?
105th.
And he died on 9/11. Were you opposed to Guantanamo from the beginning, Catherine?
From the very beginning. Our Constitution is who we are, and once upon a time we were a beacon to the world. And our rule of law, I think, is makes people admire us. And I think now we're finally going back to the place that we held in the world.
Catherine, thank you very much for your call. 9/11 family and survivor lost her brother on the 105th floor on September 11th, 2001. Thank you very much for calling. Guantanamo, of course, the United States first leased it in 1903, 45 square miles of land and water there at the tip of Cuba, used it as a coaling station. Then in 1934, a new treaty. This is the kind of treaty you get when you're the minor power. Cuba can't take it back without America signing on to that or abandoning it. So it's essentially Washington's as long as it wants it and can hold it. Matthew Waxman, how do you look at the challenge of closing the detention camp? It won't be the naval base, will still be there, but the detention camp at Guantanamo. What's involved here, Matthew?
Well, I think that's the right question to ask, because there's
very wide agreement now that Guantanamo should be closed. There's not really good agreement on exactly how to close it. For the detainees who remain there, you've got to find some alternative for them. And you have a number of options, each with its own challenges. One option is to release or transfer a detainee to a home country or a third country that's willing to take him. And there the challenge is, how do you negotiate adequate assurances from that country that they'll take steps to mitigate any continuing threat the individual poses, and adequate assurances that the individual won't be mistreated at the hands of that government. Another option is to prosecute for crimes. There the challenge is first figuring out what forum you want to prosecute in. Is this going to be a federal court prosecution, military commissions, a court-martial? And then you have to work through some difficult evidentiary issues, especially since the evidence linking many of these people to terrorism crimes is sensitive intelligence information that needs to be protected from disclosure. And then the final challenge is, what if there are some who, for one reason or another, can't be released or transferred, but also can't be effectively prosecuted, and the U.S. government doesn't want to release him? What process is that person entitled to, and where is that person going to be held? I think that will be a particularly tricky issue.
Major Fracht, you've been in the middle of this. We heard Barack Obama himself saying in the tape that there may be problems with tainted process, testimony, evidence here. How do you see that? What kind of taint? What kind of problems might we run into if these are brought into the regular or more regular legal system?
Well, I think there, first of all, that the difficulties have been grossly exaggerated by the Bush administration, and I understand why President Obama is sounding a note of caution and doesn't want to get expectations too high of being able to do this quickly. But there clearly are problems with tainted evidence. You have the problem that Professor Waxman described of sensitive evidence, which is a matter of
security,
you know, protecting
issue.
Classified mm-hmm. information. We already have procedures set up to handle those sort of national security issues, both in federal court and in military courts martial. So I don't see that as an insurmountable problem. As far as evidence, many of the confessions clearly were obtained through a coercive interrogation processes, and in some cases rising to the level of torture. But that really doesn't matter whether it was torture or not from the standpoint of whether it's admissible in a court. In an American court, evidence that is obtained through coercion is simply inadmissible. So it doesn't – the distinction between coercion and torture that has been made in the military commissions does not apply in military courts-martial or federal courts.
But does that mean you could end up with guys who in fact are bad guys but can't be successfully tried because the coercion is almost synonymous with Guantanamo?
Well, I don't believe so. And the reason I don't believe that is I believe that there is plenty of other evidence that links these individuals to for the handful of real terrorists that are down there, there is independent evidence to substantiate their involvement in al-Qaeda and in terrorist attacks. So it may be that they don't have all the evidence available, that they may not be able to convict them of every possible crime that they may have committed, but can they convict them in federal court and get lengthy sentences? Absolutely. I think, one of the driving forces behind the use of military commissions was a desire to keep the torture and keep the interrogation methods that were used secret. And, the Obama administration doesn't have that concern. They want to shed light and shine light on the abuses that occurred. So I don't think that will be a showstopper for them. And again, they're embarking on an interagency review here because they're not accepting anything that the Bush administration said and taken for granted or at face value. They're going to review each and every one of these cases. And I think when they do, they will find that there are quite a few innocent people there. There are quite a few very low-level foot soldier types that pose no threat. And then the group of people that do represent a serious threat are quite small.
800 have been brought in, 3 put on trial and convicted. Still, the characterization of the Guantanamo prisoner population as the worst of the worst has been out there. Vice President Cheney has made that point. How accurate is that? Was that ever? And how many do you see at Guantanamo as really, serious security threats now?
Well, I'm not privy to the files on all of these people. What I can tell you is that in the cases that I have personally seen, the evidence has been, exaggerated. The charges have been overblown. And just the mere fact that 550 people have been released shows you that the claims that all of these people were terrorists and that we were carefully screening people and only sending the worst of the worst there was not true. And the fact that there are dozens of people currently cleared for release shows that not everybody there does present a danger. So I think it's a small number. I don't know the exact number. Obviously we've never caught the most dangerous culprit of all, Osama bin Laden.
Let's get a call from Fort Edward, New York. And Chris, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question. Is that seems like it'd be pretty simple to close it and then just bring all the people here to the United States. And if it seems like it's a problem with those who are innocent, that we don't have a country to send them to, we stole 7 years of these people's lives. I don't see why we just couldn't settle them here in the United States. And then,
but bring them where, Chris? Bring them to your Fort Edward, New York, or where?
Well, you would bring them somewhere in the United States and say, okay, you are free to go. You can go to New York City or Boston or Los Angeles or somewhere else.
I mean, if they can't be tried and convicted, if it's not the evidence or possible, just let them go?
Those who are innocent,
yep.
If it seems like it's a problem that we can't find another country who will take them, just set things up so that they can be here in the United States.
Matthew Waxman, what do you say to that? First of all, to trying them on American soil, where would they stay? Where will they stay, I guess, while they wait? And if they're not convicted, if they're not found to have, convicted in some kind of court of law, be it courts martial or federal courts, let them go?
Well, let me respond to a couple of points that have been made. First of all, the major's emphasis on federal court prosecution, the same emphasis that we heard from Attorney General nominee Eric Holder, to prosecute in federal court, I think is the right move in that. That would be the best outcome. If federal court prosecutions can be successfully brought, that has the most legitimacy and sense of credibility. It's an open question how effective that mechanism can be. I've argued that it's going to be quite difficult. I hope I'm proven wrong on that. If not,
difficult because of tainted process, tainted testimony.
Difficult because of a number of reasons. In some cases, tainted evidence. In some cases, sensitive intelligence information that cannot be simply redacted using existing legal tools that allow for some of the evidence to come in and some of it to be shielded from the public. In some cases, it's because the key witnesses are in other countries and we can't compel them to come to the United States to testify. They may be working for intelligence services that don't want to disclose publicly that they're working with the United States. It's a range of issues. I hope many of these issues I call challenges or obstacles, not to suggest that they're insurmountable. I hope they can be surmounted, but they are challenges that will need to be worked through case by case, and will slow the process of closing Guantanamo successfully. The other point I would just want to make is, of the 550 detainees who have been who have left Guantanamo. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been cleared for release, having found that they were inappropriately detained in the first place. Others were still believed to be dangerous and were transferred pursuant to some security assurances from the transferee country.
Matthew exactly. Waxman, hold the thought. Major David Fracht, please stand by. We're talking about shutting down Guantanamo. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about shutting down the detention camp at Guantanamo. Barack Obama and the promise to end imprisonment of terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. We've been joined from Washington by Major David Fracht, judge advocate in the Air Force Reserves, represents two Guantanamo detainees. And from New York by Matthew Waxman, he was Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Detainee Affairs under George W. Bush. You can join us as well, 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Mike in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, how do we know that Guantanamo has not been a deterrent? And also, isn't this just a bone that President Obama is throwing through the left-wing side of the party?
We'll pick it up, Mike. Thanks very much. Major Fracht, what about it? How do we know that those hard images of the guys on their knees in chains, in jumpsuits, in hoods, have not been a deterrent? And you hear Mike saying, this is just a bone to be thrown to the left wing.
Well, we know that people captured in Iraq, for example, have cited Guantanamo as the number one reason for particularly foreign fighters, for them entering Iraq and seeking to fight the United States. So in terms of whether Guantanamo has made us safer, there's no question that it has not. In terms of throwing a bone to the left, I think, restoring the United States' image in the world and restoring our moral authority is something that we all should be interested in and is in the interest of the nation as a whole. So I would disagree with that comment.
Let's go to Chip in Columbia, South Carolina. Chip, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, I would disagree too. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Major Fracht and Professor Waxman. I'm a former staff sergeant, United States Air Force Security Forces, and also Special Operations. And it just really chilled me when I heard that 16-year-old, in there saying, he had lost his eye and, mm-hmm. He had lost some limbs and everything like that. I think it's a good move on the president. Now, being that I come from law enforcement, military law enforcement and all that, maybe I disagree with maybe there's some procedures that are going into play, but, Barack Obama is the commander-in-chief, so I respect him, and I think it's a good idea that Gitmo is sort of, it's outlived its time and everything like that. I don't want to see another Abu Ghraib, because Abu Ghraib was horrible. It was like regular cops like myself, MPs, SPs, whatever, in there. But then you got your CIA and your CID got in there.
Yep.
And the whole thing just turned to mess. And as far as being able to, we're asking where can you put the detainees while they're waiting for trial or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You got Eglin Air Force Base has got a federal penitentiary reservation.
In Florida.
Fort Worth, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
You got Mannheim over there, in Germany, the penitentiary and all that. And I think these might be some temporary kind of places, till, the military figures out what they want to do. But I think it's a great decision to close the Gitmo because I didn't want it to turn into another Abu Ghraib. And mm-hmm. I heard some of the other comments about it. A lot of stuff is happening in secrecy. And, that's the last thing you want to, because when you're just a regular beat cop, like I would be mm-hmm. in there and all that, somebody tells you to do something that is an unjust order and everything like that, you got to follow it. Or, you might not see daylight after that. Thank you for letting me make
time. Time to turn on the lights. Staff Sergeant Chip, thanks very much for that call. And let me get one more. Bert in Shrewsbury, Vermont. Bert, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. First of all, quick, the gentleman that called earlier that just said bring him over here and let him loose, did he mean just let him loose on the streets? I think that would be torture in itself. But then are we supposed to support him, work him back in society, give him jobs, so forth and support. And I think closing Gitmo now is putting the cart before the horse. They don't have any idea what they're going to do with these people, but they just want to close it. And I agree with the other person that says, well, that is kind of a bone just being thrown to the left so that Obama can meet one of his promises.
But Bert, to be fair, the orders coming out today, when they're signed, say there'll be a review of everything. They're not saying immediately. There's months before this may happen. But let us pick up the issues you raise. Matthew Waxman, first of all, you were Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Detainee Affairs. So I mean, how was this seen while you were in that position? And then we should get more detailed about what will happen with people who do come to the States, who don't get picked up by Europe, which has been reluctant while this has been such a mess in Guantanamo, but maybe more open to it now. We've had senators, congressmen in states where they do have military prisons. Sam Brownback in Kansas saying, no, thank you. Fort Leavenworth is not set up for that. Some pushback from San Diego and Pendleton. I don't know about Eglin. What about just what were you thinking at the time, and what about it now? Where do they actually go if they have to come to the States?
Sure. A couple of points. The first is I was appointed to a position that was created in the wake of Abu Ghraib because, as one of your callers pointed out, Abu Ghraib was a devastating catastrophe for the United States, not just from a human rights perspective, but from a strategic perspective. And in the same way, Guantanamo has one of the reasons it's important to close it is not simply for legal reasons, but for strategic reasons, for national security reasons, that continuing to operate a detention policy that's widely perceived as designed to keep individuals outside of the rule of law not only undermines American prestige and leadership, but undermines our ability to cooperate with some of our closest allies. And in the long term, the way to defeat to combat terrorism effectively is through webs of cooperative relationships with our coalition partners. In terms of what would we do with detainees who are brought here to the United States, I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges facing the Obama administration is a tough choice between releasing individuals outright or perhaps continuing to rely on a theory that they are enemy combatants and can be held pursuant to the laws of war, but maybe in military detention facilities within the United States, or perhaps even going to Congress and seeking some sort of new legislation, a statute that would authorize detention perhaps for a period of time of a narrow class of individuals pursuant to strict rules of judicial review. But I think that's going to be the toughest decision Obama is going to face on this. Closing Guantanamo is I think the easier decision in the sense that there's wide agreement that it ought to be closed. Working through the details of what are you going to do with people instead, that's going to be where the difficulties lie.
Major Frakt, for those who do come to the United States and not elsewhere, where do you think they ought to be imprisoned if that's what needs to be done?
Well, I'd like to comment first on the idea of just releasing people. There are 17 Uyghurs who have been cleared for release. There are 17 families in Washington, D.C.
Again, I should say this is from the western part of China, Muslim Chinese. The Chinese government not very friendly toward this ethnic group in general, and so people worried if they were sent back to China, what would happen to them?
Right. So we have the United States has cleared these people for release, recognized that they are not enemy combatants, they're not a danger. And there were 17 families in the Washington, D.C. area of Chinese Uyghur ethnicity, mm-hmm. All volunteering to take one of these detainees in and help them get adjusted to life here in the U.S. So they had sponsors, much as, you know, other types of immigrants would have a sponsor.
So there's 17 out of 240-something.
Pardon?
That's 17 out of 245.
45, right. Well, I'm just offering this as an mm-hmm, example mm-hmm. because Judge Urbina of the U.S. District Court here in D.C. ordered them released, and the Bush administration refused. And I think, you know, when you have a good plan, you shouldn't oppose it. So I think in terms of where people might otherwise go, for those who cannot be returned, and I think there's going to be very vigorous diplomatic efforts to get other countries to accept many of these detainees. Mm-hmm. But for those who need to be held somewhere while they're pending trial, there's no reason they can't be held in either in a military brig on a military base, and that would present no security threat whatsoever to anyone. You know, no one ever escapes from these places. So they could be held there. They could be held in federal prisons. I want to mention that some of the detainees have been indicted already in federal court. So there were U.S. attorneys who thought that they could successfully prosecute these individuals in federal court, and nevertheless, they were taken to Guantanamo instead. So, again, some of the claims of the difficulties are overblown.
Let's go to Jay in Savannah, Georgia. Jay, you're on the air.
Yes. Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi, Jay.
Tom, I just wanted to make a few points. We're treating, in my opinion, I'm an ex-naval officer. I spent a little time in Guantanamo. I think it's necessary we maintain the base there for national security.
Nobody's questioning that at this juncture, Jay.
I understand that. But as far as taking these fellows out of there, I don't think that these terrorists, and I'm using that word broadly, many of these people, I think, are really terrorists. And these are the people that would decapitate a person as soon as look at them and think nothing of it. I think that if we take the whitewash approach, I think we're making a gross mistake. I have no objection to closing the actual prison, but I do feel that we should provide some sort of another type of prison environment for them. We had the Nuremberg trials for the Nazi criminals, and if we're going to proceed, I think we should proceed on a level approaching that kind of thing.
But Jay, what if there's not enough evidence to keep them? What if they've been sitting there? I mean, you hear Major Frack saying, yes, you've got some hardcore, but what about those who aren't? Or maybe they're next to nothing.
Sure, there are innocent people involved there. There's no question about it. But I don't think we should go to the bells and whistles of the typical judicial processes that we do with the American citizens who are law-abiding and some of the other combatants that we've had in previous wars.
Law-abiding or maybe not law-abiding if they're in the courts. But, Jay, thanks. Major Frack, what do you say to Jay in this perspective?
Well, the Constitution is not bells and whistles. The Geneva Convention is not bells and whistles. I mean, this is the rule of law. And the suggestion that we should have some sort of summary or circumscribed procedures because these people are you know, different, they're terrorists, they're unworthy, that is was the approach of the Bush administration. That's what gotten us into so much trouble. You know, Nuremberg was widely perceived as a model of fairness because of the procedures that were the due process that was afforded to these people, and when many would have been quite happy to just summarily execute them. So that is a model that we should follow in terms of giving the maximum due process, because then the convictions and sentences will be seen as legitimate in the eyes of the world and can finally bring some closure to this.
Matthew Waxman, what if we get into an active terrorist situation again? We're constantly told by our leaders that it could happen. We pray it doesn't. But you were Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Detainee Affairs. You know, what if there's another attack and suddenly you've got this sort of fog of war or war on terror, and you've got people being scooped up and security trying to staunch some kind of problem. They don't know exactly who did what. Can we in the future use that full, not bells and whistles, but U.S. Constitution, habeas corpus, and all the rest in the realm of terror? Or is there still some ambiguity about that, Mr. Waxman, Professor?
Yeah, you ask a really important question, because I think all this focus on closing Guantanamo can give the misimpression that the problem we're trying to fix here is what to do with the 250 or 245 individuals who remain there. We need to find a durable solution for that set of 245 cases. But the threat of terrorism, the threat from al-Qaeda and its allies continues. And the United States and its coalition partners need a capability to continue to detain and interrogate effectively suspects, yet also within the rule of law. And I think there's, I think there are actually a range of possible solutions that fall between those requirements that are both effective from a national security standpoint, but also exist well within the rule of law and within our American principles and values.
But if that's so clear, if that's so simple, why didn't the Bush administration take that path, whatever that path means?
I'm not saying it's simple. I'm saying there is a range of choices there. I think the Bush administration made a number of terrible errors, both strategic errors and legal errors, in the way that it approached Guantanamo in the wake of 9/11. I think the way I would sum it up is the Bush administration at the most senior levels took the approach that the way to combat terrorism, the way to maximize American national security, is by giving the president the most flexibility and freedom of action, that you want to remove as much as possible legal constraints so that you have the flexibility, the latitude to take necessary measures. I think the problem with that view is it fails to recognize both the inherent importance of those legal constraints and values that were pushed aside, but also the security and U.S. interests that derive from following them. That one of the costs of pushing aside legal constraints like the Geneva Conventions and its limits on coercive interrogations, one of the costs of that is a reduction in U.S. stature in the world. The frictional effects it causes with our coalition partners who we need to cooperate with, and the propaganda and recruitment value that it causes that we heard about from Major Fracht, the recruitment value it has for our adversaries.
Major Fracht, we've just got 20 seconds here. Are you confident on the other side of Gitmo, Guantanamo, that we can do this by the book, even in the heat of terrorist threat, and stay on the up and up?
Well, I have great confidence in the Obama administration to do this in a way that is consistent with the rule of law and consistent with our values, and will keep America safe. And they're going to strike the proper balance. And I look forward to working with them on that effort.
Major David Fracht, judge advocate in the Air Force Reserves, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Matthew Waxman, professor of law at Columbia Law School. Professor Waxman, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.